So, good evening. We'll finish, I think, the balance of chapter 17 in the life divine, the divine soul, this evening. Only a few pages left. What Sri Aurobindo has been attempting to set out in philosophic language is a description of the nature, the metaphysical foundation of the divine soul, that spirit which moves from the immensity of the infinite Satchidananda into manifestation so that it can experience itself in blissful play, becomes the many, but never ceases to be the one. And how the many and the one play, both based upon the comprehending unity of all and on the apprehending power of each to look into the soul and the nature of the other, are part and parcel of what the supramental experience is. So this infinite self-existence plays constantly in the freedom of its knowledge, in the freedom of its force, in throwing itself out. And it would know itself always as the manifest absolute, the articulation of the absolute. And it would feel that as the basis, whether it is absorbed in the transcendent or exposed utterly to the play of time and space. In the one and in the many, it is the self-unfolding of its own nature, a self-determination which characterizes the play of the universe and of the individual soul stationed in the universe. So here we come. Our first paragraph is beginning in this way. In the extension, the divine soul will be aware of the three grades of the supramental existence, not as we are mentally compelled to regard them, not as grades, but as a triune fact of the self-manifestation of Satchidananda. It will be able to embrace them in one and the same comprehensive self-realization, for a vast comprehensiveness is the foundation of the truth-conscious supermind. We've spoken about these three grades before. The comprehensive, all-containing nature of Satchidananda as it comes into first expression, and then the emergence of a balanced diversity within the oneness, which characterizes the second phase, in which we move from the comprehensive into the apprehending, so that the awareness, as it is stationed in each individual form, is always in balance with the unity that underlies all. And then the third poise, of course, is when there is a projection of the supramental consciousness as if to support and enter into and become the individual, but the unity remains in the backdrop. So in the first, there would be the emphasis on unity. In the second, a balance between oneness and diversity, you might say, for a kind of shorthand. In the third, diversity, but always placed within unity. But the diversity becomes prominent. So, to continue, it will be able, again, let's read it, to embrace them in one and the same comprehensive self-realization. For a vast comprehensiveness is the foundation of the truth-conscious supermind. It will be able divinely to conceive, perceive, and sense all things as the self, its own self, one self of all, one self-being and self-becoming, but not divided in its becomings, which have no existence apart from its own self-consciousness. So, to conceive, to bring into being, to perceive, to look out, to, with knowledge, peer into the essence and the form of another, and then to sense, as if palpably, in whatever form one has, one resonates in all the being with this. So, various strata of consciousness and its many operations and functionings are described in that one little phrase. So oneness ever and ever, even in variable self-distribution, ever within its own awareness. So this first poise of the divine soul finds the same self in all. It will be able divinely to conceive, perceive, and sense all existences Let me just get a sip of water. I'll be right back. Pardon me. We'll begin again. It will be able divinely to conceive, perceive, and sense all things as the self, its own self, one self of all, one self-being and self-becoming, but not divided in its becomings, which have no existence apart from its own self-consciousness. So, again, let's recall that Brahman as Satchidananda is existence, consciousness, and delight. The self-being precedes, metaphysically, the self-becoming. The self-becoming occurs within the comprehensive unity of real being. And thus expresses it, but utterly depends upon it. It will be able, Sri Aurobindo writes, divinely to conceive, perceive, and sense all existences as soul forms of the One, which have each its own being in the One, its own standpoint in the One, its own relations with all the other existences that people the infinite unity, but all dependent on the One, conscious form of Him, in his own infinity. It will be able divinely to conceive, perceive, and sense all these existences in their individuality, in their separate standpoint, living as the individual divine, each with the one and supreme dwelling in it, and each therefore not altogether a form or eidolon, not really an illusory part of a real whole, a mere foaming wave on the surface of an immobile ocean, for these are, after all, no more than inadequate mental images, but a whole in the whole, a truth that repeats the infinite truth, a wave that is all the sea, a relative that proves to be the absolute itself when we look behind form and see it in its completeness. So the divine soul finds the one self in all. The divine soul houses itself in each and as the one, all standing in a self-recognized harmony. And thirdly, this divine soul finds all in its own individuality, one in the substance of the Supreme. So their experience would be your experience. And when you look closely into your own essence, you would find that you stand in oneness with the Supreme, and similarly perceive the presence of that Supreme in all the many about you. So let's not forget the point of the latter part of this paragraph, though, which is that Sri Aurobindo asserts a real truth to individuality. It is unerasable in the experience of unity. The individual is a persistent and real formation of the Supreme Nature. The divine soul standing as an individuality is not a fiction, is not a drop which will disappear into an oceanic being, but will continue to persist even in its unpartible immersion into the Supreme. So the all is real. The individual is real. The one is real. And there is no abrogation of that unity or that oneness. And all the warp and the woof of existence, even as it's drawn up into itself in the absoluteness of transcendence, the potentiality for the re-expression and the re-emergence of cosmos and individual persist. This is the eternal recurrence that Sri Aurobindo has written about in other passages. And he continues, "For these three are aspects of the one existence. The first is based upon that self-knowledge which, in our human realization of the divine, the Upanishad describes as the self in us becoming all existences. The second, on that which is described as seeing all existences in the self. The third, on that which is described as seeing the self in all existences." So, the first is self-knowledge, the second is all in the self, and the third is the self in all. And each of these is, to some who aspire to practice yoga, separable experiences. One might have one, but not the others. But the largest, the most inclusive experience finds that this is the nature of the divine, many stationed and yet one. And this goes back to the opening verse that Sri Aurobindo has chosen to start the 17th chapter. This, again, is the 7th verse of the Isha Upanishad. The self becoming all existences is the basis of our oneness with all. So, again, this is not an accident. The self intends to become, so posits itself as the all. That's the basis of our oneness with all, is the self which releases the many into manifestation. The self containing all existences is the basis of our oneness in difference. The self inhabiting all is the basis of our individuality in the universal. So the self becomes, contains, and inhabits. If the defect of our mentality, he writes, if its need of exclusive concentration compels it to dwell on any one of these aspects of self-knowledge to the exclusion of the others, if a realization imperfect as well as exclusive moves us always to bring in a human element of error into the very truth itself, and of conflict and mutual negation into the all-comprehending unity, yet to a divine supramental being, by the essential character of the supermind, which is a comprehending oneness and infinite totality, they must present themselves as a triple and indeed a triune realization. There is an implicit suggestion in this that as our psychology grows, as our experience of self and others and world greatens, it draws us upwards towards this supramental unity where all these three are posited as one movement. They need not be dissimilar or be exclusive. When they are experienced exclusively, then they become the basis of a different school of philosophy opposing another experience which has its own school of philosophy. And the mental warfare that occurs then is well known to us in the history of all the world's spiritual traditions, not only in the schools of Vedanta in India. Sri Aurobindo is here reconciling in the grandest possible synthesis all spiritual experience and therefore all philosophic reasoning. Continuing, if we suppose this soul to take its poise, its center in the consciousness of the individual divine, living and acting in distinct relation with the, quote, others, still it will have in the foundation of its consciousness the entire unity from which all emerges, and it will have in the background of that consciousness the extended and the modified unity, and to any of these it will be capable of returning and of contemplating from them its individuality. So from a basis of unity, relations flow out from that. And it is always possible for us to resume and pull ourselves back into the groundedness of that essential unity, or stand fully in mutuality at will. It is volitional. It is inherent in the power of the divine soul to enter into either poise or to dwell in all at once. Where it wants to place its emphasis is open to it. Let's continue. It becomes even more interesting. In the Veda, all these poises are asserted of the gods. In essence, the gods are one existence which the sages call by different names. That's the Rig Veda, the first mandala, 164.46, to be precise. But in their action, founded in and proceeding from the large truth and right, Agni or another is said to be all the other gods. He is the one that becomes all. At the same time, he is said to contain all the gods in himself, as the nave of a wheel contains the spokes. He is the one that contains all. And yet as Agni, he is described as a separate deity, one who helps all the others, exceeds them in force and knowledge, yet is inferior to them in cosmic position, and is employed by them as messenger, priest, and worker. The creator of the world and father, he is yet the son born of our works. He is, that is to say, the original and the manifested indwelling self or divine, the one that inhabits all. So Sri Aurobindo has again chosen a Vedic refrain with its rich symbolism to describe this, the large truth and the right, again calling us back resonantly to Brihat Satyam Ritam. Brihat, the large, the vast. Satyam, the true. The formation of real being into truth. And Ritam, the ordering of that truth into an active poise, a balanced harmony, we might say. So this position of Agni in this cosmos, this is the Agni is a living symbol of the supreme active in the universe, leading it upwards. He arises from this solar reality, the supramental sun, you might say, stations himself as the all-supporting Vaishvanara Agni, the universal fire, but then positions himself at the heart of all creatures and is that flame set upon the altar, which when you pour the offering upon it, takes those offerings up to the gods. And so this same being is multi-stationed. It is that same self. It is the nature of your own self. You too came from that supramental home as an expression of Satchidananda, playing with its own delight in conscious self-extension. You too are part of the cosmos, and you have your work here to do, and to discover, and to report, and to offer. So it's a wonderful depiction of how this one being became multiplied. And each image of a Godhead presented in the Veda can be seen in this way, just as we see Agni. Each face of the divine has behind it the entirety of the divine truth. It is ultimately nameless, but every name has a truth in it. The one that inhabits all. To continue, all the relations of the divine soul with God or its supreme self and with its other selves and other forms will be determined by this comprehensive self-knowledge. These relations will be relations of being, of consciousness and knowledge, of will and force, of love and delight. So he begins by saying the first poise of the divine soul sets all relations within the ground of unity. And you've noticed how from this ground of unity, relationships begin, and relationships are the nature of manifestation, the nature of creation, but it's always just the one being playing in these various roles. Relations of being, sat, of consciousness and knowledge, chit, of will, chit tapas, and force, of love and delight, ananda. So sachit ananda, distributed broadly. This is the ground of our relations, in essence, above. Infinite in their potentiality of variation. They need exclude no possible relation of soul with soul that is compatible with the preservation of the inalienable sense of unity in spite of every phenomenon of difference. Unity cannot be separated from us. It is inalienable. It comes with the nature. You can't give it away. It can't be taken from you. Unity is solid. Thus, in its relations of enjoyment, the divine soul will have the delight of all its own experience in itself. It will have the delight of all its experience of relation with others as a communion with other selves and other forms created for a varied play in the universe. It will have, too, the delight of the experiences of its other selves as if they were its own, as indeed they really are. So the truth of your own nature, your own soul, the truth of your relations with others in communion, and the delight of the experiences of the others. So they occur within your conscious being too, because you're not separated from anything. So rather than as here, where observe any human community, and somebody gets a grand experience, the other guy that didn't have that experience feels jealous about it. How come he gets it and I don't? Rather, in the supramental, you rejoice he has discovered himself, and I, over here, reflect and echo that same experience that he has, or she has, or it has. Because all are one, isn't it? You might also look at this not simply in terms of extracted experience, but also in terms of creative impulse. When the creative impulse arises in the supramental consciousness, in a divine soul, that same creative movement essentially is occurring in all others. And so never arises out of alienation from others, but always within a spontaneous harmony. So there could be no disagreement about whether this ought to come forth in manifestation or not, because it is implicitly part of your own nature and has your tacit agreement in the movement forward. So you talk about consensus. This is real consensus, feeling everything commonly, seeing everything commonly, creating and sustaining and melting into everything commonly. And all this capacity, he writes, it will have because it will be aware of its own experiences, of its relations with others, and of the experiences of others and their relations with itself, as all the joy or ananda of the One, the Supreme Self, its own self, differentiated by its separate habitation of all these forms, comprehended in its own being, but still one in difference. Because this unity is the basis of all its experience, it will be free from the discords of our divided consciousness, divided by ignorance and a separatist egoism. All these selves and their relations will play consciously into each other's hands. They will part and melt into each other as the numberless notes of an eternal harmony. Harmony. The first chapter. All problems of life are essentially problems of harmony. This is a quest for us to regain that original nature of our relationships. And again, calls us to move beyond divided mentality into the spontaneous oneness which is native to the supramental. And all we must do is to continue to evolve for our souls to gain strength and power and command over our nature and illuminate it and prepare it for this next ascent back home, but without leaving this earthly home. So to bring that here is all the quest. This is the human quest for harmony. So we've seen Sri Aurobindo write about the divine soul in essence, the divine soul in relation, the divine soul in relation to the multitude, from the poise of the self to the multitude, from the poise of the multitude back to the self. And he continues, and the same rule will apply to the relations of its being, knowledge, will, with the being, knowledge, and will of others. For all its experience and delight will be the play of a self-blissful, conscious force of being in which, by obedience to this truth of unity, will cannot be at strife with knowledge, nor either of them with delight. Nor will the knowledge, will, and delight of one soul clash with the knowledge, will, and delight of another, because by their awareness of their unity, what is clash and strife and discord in our divided being will be there the meeting, entwining, and mutual interplay of the different notes of one infinite harmony. So, both of these paragraphs end with the idea of a harmony, a coordinated harmony of the spirit. So, the harmony is set within unity as an expression of knowledge, will, blissful, variegated, forceful play, happy play, empowered to delight. More to come. In its relations with its supreme self, with God, the divine soul will have this sense of the oneness of the transcendent and universal divine with its own being. And so here, the divine soul, instead of relating to the many, relates back to the supreme self, finds its own authentic nature set within that. He says, it will enjoy that oneness of God with itself in its own individuality and with its other selves in the universality. So while it bases itself in rapt communion with the Supreme, that is also the basis of its link to the universal expression. Its relations of knowledge will be the play of the divine omniscience, for God is knowledge, and what is ignorance with us will be there only the holding back of knowledge in the repose of conscious self-awareness, so that certain forms of that self-awareness may be brought forward into activity of light. So, ignorance does not arise, but we may concentrate our consciousness as knowledge will in a manner that allows part of that knowledge to be held back for a creative purpose. He goes forward from there. Its relations of will be there the play of the divine omnipotence, for God is force, will, and power, and what with us is weakness and incapacity will be the holding back of will in tranquil, concentrated force, so that certain forms of divine conscious force may realize themselves brought forward into form of power. So just as we may hold back our knowledge, we can hold back part of our force. It may, in the human scene, be weakness, but here it's just bridled. It isn't lost. It's held back so that an exploit can be enjoyed. Its relations of love and delight will be the play of the divine ecstasy, for God is love and delight. And what with us would be denial of love and delight will be the holding back of joy in the still sea of bliss, so that certain forms of divine union and enjoyment may be brought in front in an active upwelling of waves of the bliss. So this is a summary of Sachit Ananda expressed in the poise of the divine soul. Relations of knowledge, relations of will, relations of love and delight, expressing each aspect of the Supreme Reality. So also, he writes, all its becoming will be formation of the divine being in response to these activities. And what is with us, cessation, death, annihilation, will be only rest, transition, or holding back of the joyous creative maya in the eternal being of Sachit Ananda. At the same time, this oneness will not preclude relations of the divine soul with God, with its supreme self, founded on the joy of difference, separating itself from unity to enjoy that unity otherwise. It will not annul the possibility of any of those exquisite forms of God enjoyment, which are the highest rapture of the God lover in his clasp of the divine. So as we gaze back at this paragraph, we can see that what in the supramental is a deliberate posturing of conscious being in holding back knowledge, in holding back power, in holding back the experience of bliss, so that we can enter into a creative play that allows us to discover at the end of the journey some exquisite experience of the conscious play of bliss empowered in the multitude. Is in contrast with what we experience here. So we'll see that we must turn next to that, really. How is it that this deliberate positing of our energies in the supramental permits an eventual separation from unity, so that ignorance and division can arise, so that we experience loss of knowledge, we experience loss of power, we experience loss of bliss, we experience, instead of eternity, the termination of name and form again and again and again. That mystery we have to explore, and Sri Aurobindo will get right to it in the next chapter. But we have one more paragraph to go. But before we leave this paragraph, let's note that in writing this, Sri Aurobindo has authenticated the various types of yogas, because each one of these experiences is the truth of a different brand of yoga. So the largest yoga, the synthetic yoga, would combine all of these into a harmony where delight and power and knowledge are looking at each other and seeing the same self in all, just as the divine soul, gazing into the eyes of another, sees the same supreme self there. But, he writes, what will be the conditions in which and by which this nature of the life of the divine soul will realize itself? All experience in relation proceeds through certain forces of being formulating themselves by an instrumentation to which we give the name of properties, qualities, activities, faculties. As, for instance, mind throws itself into various forms of mind power, such as judgment, observation, memory, sympathy, proper to its own being, so must the truth consciousness or supermind affect the relations of soul with soul by forces, faculties, functionings proper to supramental being. Otherwise, there would be no play or of differentiation. What these functionings are, we shall see when we come to consider the psychological conditions of the divine life. At present, we are only considering its metaphysical foundations, its essential nature and principles. Suffice it at present to observe that the absence or abolition of separatist egoism and of effective division in consciousness is the one essential condition of the divine life. And therefore, their presence in us is that which constitutes our mortality and our fall from the divine. This is our original sin, or rather, let us say in a more philosophical language, the deviation from the truth and right of the Spirit, from its oneness, integrality, and harmony, that was the necessary condition for the great plunge into the ignorance which is the soul's adventure in the world, and from which was born our suffering and aspiring humanity. So, the sense of separativity must disappear. We must erase that to regain the divine life that is our original home. But here we are, housed in humanity, and all our human aspirations aim at a recovery of this supramental truth. What we aspire for, an immortal awareness of our soul, unconditioned, or should I say, undiminished bliss, undimmed knowledge, the experience of infinity, what is beyond the play of time and space. All these things towards which we aspire are the very nature of the supramental consciousness. So I think we've ended this chapter in the Divine Soul, and we'll have plenty of opportunity to refer back to it, because he has essentially described for us here the nature of the Supreme as it has become the Jivatman, the central being. And we'll be close upon passages which explain and flesh that out to us soon. I think, again, if you'll permit me, I'd like to close the evening with a passage from Salvatry. This is from an exchange that Salvatry has with the Lord of Death. All contraries are aspects of God's face. The many are the innumerable one. The one carries the multitude in his breast. He is the impersonal, inscrutable soul. He is the one infinite person seeing his world. The silence bears the eternal's great dumb seal. His light inspires the eternal word. He is the immobile's deep and deathless hush, its white and signless blank negating calm. Yet stands the Creator Self, the Almighty God, and watches his will done by the forms of gods, and the desire that goads half-conscious man, and the reluctant and unseeing night. These wide divine extremes, these inverse powers, are the right and left side of the body of God. Existence, balanced twixt two mighty arms, confronts the mind with unsolved abysms of thought. Darkness below, a fathomless light above, in light are joined but sundered by severing mind, stand face to face, opposite, inseparable, two contraries needed for his great world task, two poles whose currents wake the immense world force. In the stupendous secrecy of his self, above the world, brooding with equal wings, he is both in one, beginningless, without end. Transcending both, he enters the absolute. His being is a mystery beyond mind. His ways bewilder mortal ignorance. The finite, in its little sections parked, amazed, credits not God's audacity, who dares to be the unimagined all, and see and act as might one infinite. Against human reason, this is his offense. Being known to be forever unknowable, to be all and yet transcend the mystic whole, absolute, to lodge in a relative world of time, eternal and all-knowing, to suffer birth, omnipotent, to sport with chance and fate, spirit, yet to be matter and the void, illimitable beyond form or name, to dwell within a body one and supreme, to be animal and human and divine, a still deep sea, he laughs in rolling waves, universal he is all, transcendent none. Next week, Mind and Supermind, Chapter 18. Namaste, Jai Ma.